ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा इस साइड से आलू बनेगा उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hi, you're listening to episode 40 of Attention Plus on the Talking Stuff Network. We are recording this on 12th of May 2019 and I am Vikram Mohan. Before we begin though, I would just like to draw your attention to the devastation from the cyclone in Orissa, and we would like to appeal to all our listeners to donate to the Chief Minister's Relief Fund there. We will have a link to the official donation page from the Odisha government in our show notes. So while you're listening, please do take a few minutes out to contribute towards this. The devastation is horrendous and we all should do our bit towards helping people jump back. So, anyway, starting off with the podcast, as the elections, IPL, Game of Thrones, all are drawing to their finale and we have a lot to talk about. Hey, Arnab, all our lives we are going to have a big hole in our life in a month, right? With IPL, Game of Thrones, elections, everything ending up. So, how do you think you're going to cope up with this? But what are you going to do for entertainment in a month from now?
I think we'll always find something to be entertained by. I think this is, we live in an era where, because of, people always like to say that things have gotten worse, but actually things have gotten much better because people have much more leisure. There's so much in terms of the leisure industry than there was when in the 80s and the 90s, where people spent their time going to office and then they would stand in line to pay their electric bills or their gas bills. And all of these things have changed so much that I think there's a lot of time that people have on hand. And there is just an enormous, enormous amount of content. So I'm not, this is, on my list of terrible things that can happen, which include environmental collapse, running out of things to do and watch is not one of them. I think we are safe on that count.
Okay. Today, in fact, we've got a kind of a different structure for the podcast because we've got lots of things happening. So rather than dwelling on one or two things, we figured that we'll ask Arnab all the questions which you guys have sent in, as well as I'm going to ask Arnab some of the many, many things that are happening in the news. So we hope you're going to have fun. It's going to be a nightmare for me to annotate everything though, but it's going to be fun. Arnab, to start off with some appreciation and a question for you from one of our listeners based on last week's podcast when we had Harini on. So I'm just reading out his question. Unfortunately, he's not given his name yet. So I'm just reading it out and he says, "Hello Vikram, writing to you about Attention Plus episode. Fan of Great Bong and this episode shows why. I follow both Arnab and Harini on Twitter and understand that they are on opposite sides when it comes to BJP Congress. I'm not sure about that. But the civilized discussion and the trying to understand other points, other person's point of view makes it great. Even if they won't agree with each other, they at least make an effort to know where the other person is coming from. Thanks for very interesting discussion." Now coming to the question. He says, "My question is, why don't we see it more often on other media? And I don't think it's eyeballs or TRP related. It's that this type of genuine content is lacking and therefore people are watching GB's namesake." Of course, we all know that means Republic TV. So what do you, Arnab? Why don't we see this more often?
So I would disagree on the last thing. It is a matter of TRP. We have discussed this several times in this podcast that, and I can say this from my own experience. So if I look at this, first of all, thank you for liking this podcast. You know, words of encouragement are always encouraged. I've said this, I think I said it in the first episode itself, that that my critics are always, always active. They're always active. They're always very vocal. There's a silent majority which doesn't say anything. And they kind of presume that their silence is their approval. If there was something to say bad, they would say it. But I requested that people flip that. And, you know, if you like something, please go ahead and say it. Because that's really the only reason why, we do this. It's for the pat on the head and the few biscuits. But coming back to this question, I think it's important. It is a matter of TRP. So you talked about commercial television. So commercial television, and this is not, or commercial media, let's say, this is not commercial media in the sense that neither Vikram nor I, we make our money from this. We all have day jobs. This is a hobby for both of us. So that gives us the ability, that gives us the distance to be able to talk about things without worrying about, will this make us money? We don't have to think on those lines. It's not that I think that Arnab Goswami is incapable of having a civil discussion. Many people have said that in personal life, he's very different. He's not the person on screen. That is a screen persona he puts on. In real life, he's actually a very decent person, very soft-spoken person. So the reason why he puts that... So if you look at Arnab Goswami before he came on to Times Now, when he was Rajdeep Sardesai, when he was with Rajdeep Sardesai, he was actually a soft-spoken person at that point of time. And guess what happened? He got overshadowed by Rajdeep Sardesai. He got overshadowed in that channel. He was never taken seriously. That he, it's very obvious he bears that cross on his back even now. When he goes and attacks all of these guys, it's a personal thing. It's not just an ideological thing. The depth, you know, the edge of his attack against his so-called Latians media comes not just from commerce. It comes from something deep inside him. The fact that he was not taken seriously at NDTV, perhaps because he was not, perhaps he did not have the kind of urbane charm that Sardesai has, or, you know, Vishnu Shom has. I don't know what the reason is. I can only speculate. But coming back to your question, I'm kind of digressing from that again and again, is I think it is a matter of eyeballs. People, there are two kinds of people who tune in to these fight fests. I think that in terms of civilized conversation, I think NDTV does a fairly decent job. So if you go to and watch NDTV shows, it's not that they're shouting down everybody. Now, it's true that NDTV is extremely politically biased and they bring heavily slanted people on the show. And the only right-wing voices they will bring are people who are so insane and so batshit crazy that just by opening their mouth, they damn their own causes. So they bring those kinds of people to represent the other side. That is there. I mean, I'm not saying that they're not biased. They're as biased as Times Now. But at least in modus operandi, they let their guests speak. And that's why nobody watches NDTV.
Right.
that's why they absolutely suck in terms of TRP. The channels which succeed are the channels where it's not news, it's a spectacle. I mean, you don't tune in to Arnab Goswami's show for insight. I mean, if you're tuning in to Arnab Goswami's show for insight, then you're going to watch Student of the Year for an insight into the education system. Okay, so that's not the reason why. They don't exist for that reason. Though ostensibly Student of the Year is about a student and a college, but it's not about that. We all know that. Just like that, Arnab Goswami's shows are not about news or opinions. It is a different form of reality TV. It is like Big Boss, where people go home at the end. That's the only difference. So what you see is a kind of manufactured reality. And that is what makes that show to be so insanely popular. And that basic principle has been taken and transplanted outside. It has been transplanted into media websites. So Scroll and Wire and all these people, they're not in the business of presenting balance. It is not a business model. Balance is not a business model. If you do balance, you will be like us. We don't make money, and that's one of the reasons is perhaps we will never make money. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. But the point is, the business is always in extremes. It's there in the US too. I mean, CNN was at one point of time considered, it was always kind of centrist with a very left bias, but it was kind of centrist. But what CNN has done over the last few years after Trump came into power was they have steadily, and this is shown in their TRPs, it's become better. They have moved progressively to the left. And they are now taking on MSNBC, which has always been extremely left. I mean, Rachel Maddow is absolutely as batshit crazy as any of the Fox anchors. So what I'm trying to say is, really, it is a question of TRP. It's not that people cannot have a civilized discourse, but the real trouble with this, and I don't grudge Arnab Goswami his multi-crore salary or anybody else. I mean, this is capitalism. But what really worries me is that ultimately that behavior that people see on television, it ultimately seeps into their interactions with their friends. And I've seen this kind of behavior coming into WhatsApp groups, coming into like bands of friends who I've seen it in my own, like own Jadavpur University group, where I had to remove myself from the group actually, because I just cannot see these people. I mean, I remember them in the 90s, you know, when we used to play cricket, and it was a different kind of, I don't even think of them as, but I don't even imagine I ever discussed politics with them. But the only thing they can think of is forwarding anti-Modi memes or anti-Rahul Gandhi memes. And that's the only thing they define, because in a way, there is no other thing that we can talk about. You know, middle-aged, you know, we are all middle-aged men. We can no longer talk about, you know, girls and arts and all these things. We can't, right? We've moved beyond that. So we really don't have any kind of topic to talk on, except a mutual hatred of each other's political positions. It's never really a positive discussion. It's never why you like someone. It's the other guy sucks. It's you're an enemy.
Right.
And that's, and that seeps in. That's come. That wasn't there before. If you look at even some of the more venerable media outlets like The Hindu and The Telegraph, that's all they do. I mean, Telegraph at one point of time used to be a rather centrist newspaper. It was actually worth reading. But look at what Telegraph has become now. And Telegraph, it's not a coincidence that Telegraph had a round of layoffs before their new avatar. So their business model obviously was not working. So this kind of partisanship that you see, much of it from corporate media is actually put on. It is a corporate strategy. The unfortunate thing is that people buy into it. They actually imbibe it. It's kind of an addiction. And just like cigarette ads make you smoke, that's really the tragedy. And so the reason why I want to have the podcast, this is, I guess we started by saying this, is I want to provide an alternative. I want to provide initially a non-commercial, but I hope that someday, and I don't think we're progressing towards that in any appreciable way, is to be able to make money, to make this more self-sustaining, to, you know, improve the tech, to improve everything. But we can't, because it's ultimately, it's a, like, which one do you do? Should I swing to the right? I mean, I know I can't swing to the left. I mean, it would be just too much. And everybody in the left and center, you know, they hate me. So where would I go? The thing is, the money is not the important thing. You know, we will try to keep, we will be true to our principles here and try to be as centrist. And again, something which is worth discussing. Be as centrist and as issue-based here as possible. And for every guest who comes on here, who we are able to book, I can guarantee you this, you will get your chance to speak. You will not be spoken over. I might not disagree with you, but I will provide you the platform to talk. It is very important that you be given the platform to talk. It is very important that I listen. I think, you know, I think it was Ruskin Bond who said there are more books, that there are more authors today than there are readers. And I think there are more talkers today than there are listeners.
Right. Yeah. And it all comes back to the centrifuge effect, copyright Arnab. Okay. Next thing I want to do, right from there, I want to pull you on into, not sure, this is not cricket, this is politics. And we're going to talk about Gautam Gambhir. So I'm not going to talk about or ask you about the letter. Let's keep that aside. That's trash. But rather the so-called body double scandal. And for our listeners who might not have heard about it, let me just give you a brief background. There was this photo circulated where Gautam is trapped in the front seat of a car and people taking his photographs and all. And there's another chap. Again, some people have pointed out on Twitter that might be his manager, who is on top, you know, like a typical campaign van, and he is on top and waving to the crowds. So what I saw from the speak was exactly what I described. But some people saw an attempt by him to have a body double campaign for him while he was shielding himself from the heat by hiding in the front seat of a non-tinted car. So Arnab, the question I want to ask you is this like one of those photographs that people have varying opinions about, you know, the ones where they say, do you see this color of the shoe or that color of the dress, red and white and gold or whatever?
So first of all, I don't.
Have you seen this?
I have seen this. I have seen the image. First of all, there are two things. One is, okay, let's assume that he's sitting there because he doesn't want to go out and face the heat. Okay, it's too hot and he doesn't want to go out. Let's assume the worst. All right. How is that in any shape or form relevant to him as a politician? Okay. Unless it would be relevant to him as a sportsman if he was trying to get into the Indian team and, you know, he wanted to not stay in the sun, then you could say, is he fit? Will he pass the yo-yo test? He's retired, right? It doesn't make sense. Secondly, just from a point of, would Gautam Gambhir sit inside? Why would he sit inside the friggin' truck when his body double is behind him? He would not even be there, right? The purpose of a body double, the purpose of a surrogate is to fool people into thinking that Gautam Gambhir is there when actually he is not, so that he can be somewhere else. Why would he be in that same car right in front? If you looked at what was happening in Bengal with Mamata Banerjee's nephew, Arijit or Abhijit Banerjee, it was like a statue of him, which was being kind of carried around. It's funny, but there's nothing wrong with it. So I don't see there's anything wrong with that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with him actually having a body double. If he has, and I don't think that's in any shape or form relevant to his politics. What's more significant is, anybody who gets associated with BJP now has their entire legacy, their entire, what have they done for the country being doubted? Javed Akhtar at one point of time called Sehwag a failed cricketer. Okay. Sehwag. See, it.
He did? Wow. He did. I didn't know that.
And failed cricketer something, frustrated cricketer something, he called him. You see, I might not agree with Javed Akhtar, but I would severely criticize somebody calling Javed Akhtar, somebody who doesn't know poetry, or somebody who is a failed poet, okay, or a failed lyricist, or a failed scriptwriter. It's not true, okay? It's just not true. So you might disagree with his politics. And by the way, Javed Akhtar did apologize for that after that. So in the sake of completeness, he did realize that he shouldn't have said that. But with respect to Gambhir, with respect to anybody who associates with BJP, it is that the people want to then attack him personally. They want to attack his legacy as a cricketer. And it really doesn't make sense. He's retired. He's trying to establish himself as a politician. Talk about his policies. If he doesn't have any policies, if you think that he's ultra-nationalist, that he doesn't stand for anything, those are valid criticisms to have. But if the conversation is going to be, is he sitting in the front seat of a truck while there's a body double? And I've seen the picture. The guy in no shape or form looks like Gautam Gambhir. Other than the fact that he's similar skin tone and he's wearing glasses, which I think everybody in Delhi wears, that's part of that's part of Sultan of Delhi culture, that whole dress. So I just don't see what exactly there. Even if he was standing there holding a bat or something, I would understand. I don't know. Okay, people think the bat, they think of them compete, but I just don't. This is again one of those friggin' non-issues which become issues because people are so invested in bringing down the person rather than what his politics or what he brings. I mean, some people would say, but Arnab, you do that too. I do that too. I wouldn't say that I'm not guilty of that. But there are some, specifically, there are some people who are not just persons. People like Rahul Gandhi, they're not just persons. They represent, and we'll talk about that later, maybe in another podcast, but they represent a kind of culture. So it is important that we talk about the person, not so much as the boundaries of their bodies and the person you see, but what they represent. And they don't just represent him as an individual. They represent a culture, a history, a way of looking at the world that almost goes back decades. Gambhir isn't that. Okay, Gambhir isn't that. He's done nothing of note in politics or of ignominy in politics. He's just a BJP candidate. He will be their next generation Kirti Azad, I'm guessing. And that's about it.
Oh, God. Okay. And from there, we are going to go to a different place. I just wanted to ask you about Time Magazine's Divider in Chief cover story. So aren't we, including me right now, just playing into Time's hands by discussing this and giving it publicity, which is exactly what Time wanted? What do you think is the reasoning behind time carrying this. Again, I don't want to go into whether the article is right. I've not read the article. I don't think I will, because I'm not a subscriber. But this is a pure eyeballs play, isn't it?
So first of all, you have to understand that Time Magazine is not that. This Time Magazine isn't the Time Magazine that we used to know. I don't know if they even have a print edition in the US anymore. So the Time Magazine, so when you pull out a cover from the 1980s and say Time Magazine, that Time Magazine is not the same as this Time Magazine in terms of influence. Nobody in the US now refers to Time Magazine in any shape or form. Whatever Time produces does not get any kind of discussion. I mean, people have moved on. You know, what people are saying in Daily Beast or Politico, these things are more important, at least in the US, which is where Time Magazine is based, than anything the Time Magazine itself produces. So as a news outlet, Time Magazine is dead. Okay. So first of all, in a way, it doesn't matter what Time Magazine says. Second is, but Time Magazine was at one point of time extremely influential in the 80s and in the 90s and even before that. So Time and Life Magazine. So this is not a reflection of their history, but a commentary on their present. Second is, in Time Magazine's defense, they had two articles. One was defending him and one was against him. And that was a very smart move. So they lead with the negative. You have to lead with the negative in this day and age. Because nobody reads positive things. This kind of comes back to the first question. If you like someone, you are not likely to read about that person. Hate is a much bigger motivator for our actions than like. Which is why you have so many negative comments, why Twitter is such a cesspool of negativity, right? Because, you know, when our media mavens say everybody is ganging up against us, I understand that. Because they only see the negative reactions. But they have like 5 million, 10 million followers. You know, they have a huge gang of people behind them who turn up to see their shows, who turn up for their events. Except they also don't speak up in their favor, perhaps. And so there is never really a business imperative to say something good about someone. It's always in the business imperative to say something bad. Now, Time Magazine, to cover up their behinds, they also have a flirty fluff piece about Modi, also written by Jan Bremmer. But that there is so that, you know, to cover the other side also, but they basically lead with the negative story, and that is fairly common. Again, it's not that also in Times defense they also carried a negative article about Manmohan Singh. So rather than, again, I do not subscribe to that Time is anti-Hindu or anti-India. This is the other side of the crazy crowd, where any kind of media decision made by the foreign media outlets is a sinister conspiracy against a religion or a country. It is not. Cool down, man. It's Time's opinion. Everybody knows who Atish Taseer is. And so I just don't think that we need to worry about it. You know, who reads Time, first of all? Nobody here reads Time. Nobody who reads Time in India will ever turn up to vote. So, doesn't matter.
Okay. And the next one, we are going to go to cricket and not IPL. So, what I wanted to ask you, and we've got a kind of a flavor of this even coming in from a couple of readers, people want to know, isn't Pakistan actually being very smart by playing England just before the World Cup, while our cricketers are racking up injuries in IPL?
So if you remember, India played Australia before the last World Cup in Australia. India had a long series in Australia before last World Cup, and it didn't do us good, a lot of good. I mean, it did do us good. I take back. We did play very well in the prelim stages. We didn't lose any game till we went and lost to Australia. So, is it a good idea to go to England and play in those conditions? Absolutely it is. But we know very well that IPL has to happen. It is not just a question of players. It's too much responsibility is put on the players The real people who make money from IPL are the exact same people who finance Indian cricket. Okay. So it is, IPL is such a corporate behemoth. It is backed by so many big companies that, again, you always remember the BCCI is a private club. It take, I mean, they want to use the nation card when it suits them, but they themselves, in order to escape government oversight, have repeatedly stressed that they are a private club. And as a private club, they have every right. They are just a club which has India in its title. It has the license to use the word India, just as Chennai Super Kings has the license to use the word Chennai and Kolkata Knight Riders have the license to use the word Kolkata. But there's nothing about Kolkata Knight Riders otherwise that has anything to do with Kolkata. It's just they have the license to use the name. I don't think that the Team India is any different. So from a cricketing point of view, from a strategic point of view, yes, India should have been playing in England at this point of time. However, given the state of cricket, I think it is, you would have to be a Boy Scout to expect that IPL would be cancelled or curtailed in order for India to win the World Cup. As AB de Villiers put it, the IPL is bigger than the World Cup. So that should tell you something. It is bigger than the World Cup because it is where the money lies. World Cup and history, jai tele.
Okay. And next, Game of Thrones. I don't have any questions as such, but just two more episodes to go. So any thoughts on story so far and where it's going?
Yeah, we were going to talk about Game of Thrones last episode. So for those of you who haven't seen it, and I don't know why you haven't seen it yet, you may want to forward this to the next topic, but just want to discuss the famous episode 2. Because I was going to discuss this last week, but with Harini was there and she doesn't follow Game of Thrones, so we just didn't have that last week. So there was a lot of crapping on Game of Thrones has become the latest social media sensation. It actually happens whenever you have any kind of popular culture phenomena like Game of Thrones. Initially, it is cool to watch Game of Thrones, and now it is cool to diss it because everybody is watching it. But I personally thought that that season 8 episode 2 was very, very well done. First of all, we discussed this before that in a way it's never possible to in a character arc driven story. It's not a story-driven story. That it's very difficult to bring character arcs to a satisfactory conclusion for everyone. Because one of the things about Game of Thrones is it's really a world-building exercise rather than a story-building exercise. And so when you have to terminate that world, it is never going to end in a way that you find satisfying. So let's look at some of the criticisms about episode 3. I'm sorry, it was not episode 2, it was episode 3. So first, a criticism was that it was too dark. And first of all, there were some technical problems that we later learned about darkness, but it had to be. See, without darkness, the zombie army is just a collection of Walking Dead extras. I don't know if you follow Walking Dead, but zombies charging at you isn't scary. Right. I mean, it's not scary because it's been seen so many times. And Walking Dead is a pretty popular TV series too. So what they decided, and I think that was a very good creative decision, was to just show a dark void where they were all standing. And the thing about them was that they were not making any sound because they're all dead, right? So it's this element of horror that, you see this dark void and this absolute stillness. There's not a single, you can hear a pin drop, and there's this army of people standing there without making any noise. And that itself, is brilliantly done because that is really the pinnacle of horror because it allows you to fill up the gaps with your own imagination. If you overexposition, so once the zombies came in, if you recall, the effect was gone. It was the best part of the episode when you couldn't see them. The best part of the episode is when you can't make out exactly which dragon is going after which dragon. You don't know because war ultimately is like that. It is not a choreographed MMA battle. It is not World WWF. It is about the uncertainty about not understanding who is who.
So
I think that as is an image, that that whole image of the Dothraki rushing in with their Arak set on fire, I think that was brilliant. Which brings me to the Dothraki. You know, people were saying they were dissatisfied with how soon the Dothraki rush in and they're dead within a second. And if you read the novels, and even you don't need to read the novels, if you've been like really paying attention, you'll realize that the Dothraki are actually very bad warriors. They're only lethal against women, children, and pastoral tribes. Multiple times, even in the first book, when Robert Baratheon is alive, they first get that's when he sends this assassin to kill Daenerys. Is that he hears that she's, you know, building up an army of Dothraki, and one of them says, you know, what? So what? So what? You know, Dothraki, you know, they've never, the knights will kill them. And that's true, because the Dothraki don't know how to fight. I mean, their entire thing is based on brutality and power over people who are powerless. But when they run, when they're charging in, that's supposed to inspire fear. For people who are dead, there is no fear, right? So they don't care. So they just swarm the Dothraki and they're dead like that. You see that the people who are trained progressively do better and better against the zombies. So the Unsullied do better against the zombies. The knights do better against the zombies. The Dothraki, they don't. Now see, this is when you create a world, you create these rules. You create these rules that these guys are basically thugs. They're like gundas. So they will... I am perfectly fine, and I actually appreciate when something as sprawling as this epic remains true to its basic rules. That is very, very important. I am perfectly fine with believing in dragons as long as you define a set of rules and conform to it. So every universe, every world has to define its own laws of physics and its own reality, and then it needs to be consistent with it. And I've criticized Game of Thrones before for not being consistent sometimes, but this was not it. Third thing I noticed, somebody said, tactics? Where there were no battle tactics. I've seen better tactics in Bahubali. Yeah, okay, so Bahubali is the greatest movie of all time. No, it isn't. So first of all, battle tactics, the very basic thing about battle tactics is that it's supposed to work when you're up against another rational human being who has a sense of self-preservation, who can make a rational thought. They can be fooled. You can play tricks with their eyes. It doesn't work against people who are already dead. Okay, it doesn't make sense against people who do not have that consciousness to even understand what you are doing and who are basically being remote controlled by this one mega consciousness, which is the Night Kings. And if you think about it, there was a plan, but Daenerys, the moment she sees that her dear Dothraki army has been, you know, extinguished within a second, she gets up on her dragon and flies off. So that these things I really liked, because that was the hallmark of George R.R. Martin, in the sense that things never went according to plan. There was always randomness, because that's life. You know, people don't, like in Bahubali, you know, you have a plan and everybody sticks to the plan and the better plan wins. Real life and real battles aren't like that. People lose heart. People forget stuff. You know, people are humans. So this one side, which is humanity, which everybody is behaving like humans. And then there's this other side, which is inhumanity. They're not really behaving like humans at all. When they see a fire pit, they just drop down into the fire pit so that the next guy can basically come behind him and go over. So this is, again, that all of it makes sense. And I thought all of it was beautifully accomplished. I just felt I loved the place where the whole fire pit comes out. I think everything, I just don't see any ground for criticizing, which brings me back to, I think the biggest thing is, why did the Night King come down to kill Bran? Why didn't he just blaze the whole place with his ice bat?
Right.
So again, if you ask that question, then you haven't been paying attention. They answered that question, why he doesn't do that. Because you see, the Night King, if you recall the lore around the Night King, the Night King was created by the Children of the Forest. He was an actual human being who was created by the Children of the Forest in their battle against men. And then he basically turned on them. So he was a human being who was stabbed. And Bran sees that when he goes back into the past. And so he has ultimately he kills without reason or goal. He has nothing personal against anyone. And that's really what makes him frightening. You know, he doesn't care for logic. He doesn't care. I mean, no, he doesn't talk to anyone. He's not there looking for something. You can't bribe him. You can't make him the emperor. And
he's like a quiet joker.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't care to even talk to you. He doesn't even know who you are. He doesn't even care to know who you are. Rich, poor, he doesn't care. Okay, just doesn't care. So that's what makes him terrifying. He cannot be reasoned with. As you're right, with Joker. And with Joker, at least his objective is to create chaos. You don't even know what Night King's objective is, really. And that's what makes him so brilliant, because he's inscrutable. Okay. Now, but there is a part of him, because of his history, he does have one enemy. He does have one person whose death is personal to him. And that is the leader of the Children of the Forest, the Three-Eyed Raven, who resides in Bran. So this is the guy who he has been pursuing in space and through time, through countless centuries. So obviously he's going to come to kill him. That's the only thing which makes sense. That is his objective in a way. If there is any objective he has, it is for him to go and take revenge. Not as the Night King, but as the person he was before he became the Night King. So yes, he has to do it. And Bran knows that. The Three-Eyed Raven knows that also. It's not that he knows everything. It's not. And again, there's another question, which is, why did Bran let Greyjoy die? So the fact is, Bran says that several times. If he says something, and if you've seen Avengers Endgame, I think Bran doesn't say it, but I'm giving you a spoiler for Avengers Endgame, but you know, at least one character there says the same thing. If I know what's going to happen, and if I tell you, that is not going to happen.
Right.
So Bran cannot, whatever he knows, he cannot tell anyone, because that will change. The very fact of him telling it will change what is going to happen. So this is the circular nature of time. So that's why he doesn't let, and he realizes, Bran realizes that the reason why Theon Greyjoy is there is because he doesn't have a life anymore. Okay, he's not a human. I mean, his entire person that he was has been sucked out by, you know, what he has undergone. And all that is really left for him is to come back and to atone for what he did. He's basically come back there to die. And it was all, I mean, even Theon Greyjoy knows that. And at the very end, when he says thank you to him, he basically releases him. He basically tells him, look, you've done all that you could have done. You know, don't hold the guilt that you're carrying, let it go. And, you know, death is inevitable for him. But what Bran is trying to do is to save his soul. And by doing that, he saves his soul. So I thought that was a beautiful, beautiful piece. You know, that the place where he says that, thank you. The only thing that I had about the ending was, I wish that it should have been Bran who stabs him and not Arya. Because of the reason that I said, because it is really a battle between the Three-Eyed Raven, who resides in Bran, and the Night King. So everything was absolutely fine. It should have been Arya coming from behind. You know, if your question is how did the White Walkers not see Arya, then you definitely have not been paying attention. Because the very purpose of Arya's training was to move like a cat, if you remember, in the first season with Caesar Forel, that's what he
did. Right.
So it is for you to move in a way that nobody can detect you, not even the dead. And we've seen that the Game of Thrones has spent a lot of time establishing the level of training that she has gone through. It's not that she just went in and came out as this super, super assassin. We've had this entire season showing exactly the kind of like training that she has gone through in order to come to this level where, yeah, even the dead can't detect she's coming. So that part of it was fine. I also appreciate the fact that it's not that she succeeds in stabbing him. He realizes just before that there's somebody behind him. He turns around, grabs her. And I think at that point of time, the trick should have been for her. And that should have been the plan all along.
To throw the knife.
So the knife was going to drop. Okay. And it was Bran who was going to drive it in. Because here's the thing. You see, the Night King's weak point is a place which can be hit only by either that knife move or by someone who is at that height. Somebody who's sitting in a wheelchair. And so it makes perfect sense when Bran basically wargs and basically says, I know exactly how it's going to end. That Bran realizes that his biggest advantage is that he's sitting in the wheelchair. That that the very fact, the start of Game of Thrones, and he says that to Jaime, that when Jaime comes to apologize to him for throwing him down, that everything that's happened wouldn't have happened. You know, the journey that you have taken wouldn't have happened if you had not done that. So that was part of what you had to do. And that would have made entire sense. It would have tied everything together. If he hadn't thrown him down, he wouldn't have lost his legs. This journey wouldn't have happened. And the Night King wouldn't have died. Because the only thing that can kill a Night King is somebody who stands at that level. That's his level. And so Night King is not looking below his eye line at this point of time. Plus the fact is Night King is absolutely secure at that point of time. When he comes walking in the slow motion with his posse, as I said, with his Politburo, he is what? He doesn't even think there is anybody there. So he doesn't think that the greatest danger is actually sitting there. And it would have made so much sense because that would explain that kind of Bran's cockiness throughout. It seems that Bran knows where this is happening. That the fact that he is so chilled out is not necessarily because he doesn't have fear, but because he's seen this coming and he exactly knows what is going to happen. And that, I think, would have given this... It would have been much more in, again, this is the author in me. This is how I would have written it, actually. So.
And has there been a worst kept secret than the Daenerys Jon Snow relationship? It's like every 5 minutes, somebody is telling somebody else is telling somebody else.
Of course. I mean, that is the way something like this would imagine if this was a real world. And so first of all, it was secret for a long time. Okay. So for a long time, as long as the only person who...
I mean, between seasons, it was secret. No, but
So you have to realize, see, this is where good writing is. So it was secret with Stark for ages. Okay. Because of the character of Ned Stark. Because of the way the character Ned Stark is drawn, is he's somebody who keeps everything himself. He keeps it he's bottled in. He's not an emotional guy at all. I mean, he feels a lot for the world, but he can't express it. He's possibly the best person in all Westeros. But you don't see it coming out. And he just to keep everything inside. So he's a guy who can keep secrets, and he keeps the secret. Then Bran also doesn't tell it to anyone, because Bran also doesn't have the, like, he's Bran, but he's not Bran. He said so before. I mean, Bran is dead. It's another guy inside him. But the problem starts the moment, you know, and Dany knows this, right? And she says, don't tell anyone. And then Jon Snow,
right.
Okay, another thing that you can see throughout, this is a side thing, is that Jon Snow is the shit as a warrior, okay? You know, Jon Snow throughout, like whenever Jon Snow goes into fight, he's a very brave guy. He's just a brave guy who people love. He's a leader. He will run in the front, but he never can win a battle. He has to be saved by somebody else. He's unable. He does not have that strategic vision. At least Dany can win battles. But Jon Snow, for all his magnetic skills, he's a magnetic leader. Everybody gravitates towards him, which Dany realizes that everybody loves him. It's because he's a good person, but he's not particularly good at what he does. So he's not that great. He's a good swordsman, but he can't work at a level above that. Tyrion is much better than him in that respect. But coming to this, yes. But the moment he starts telling his sisters, he tells Sansa, and then Sansa, of course, is somebody who's from the Littlefinger school of, and she immediately tells it to the guy. So the thing is, it makes sense because Sansa has been brought up, and the way the character has developed is that Sansa has become, see, they have all absorbed in many ways. These young people have absorbed the traits of the adults they have been exposed to. Okay. So Sansa has become like Littlefinger. So she's smart, she can see things coming, and she knows how to look after her own people. And with Littlefinger, it was his own people, was just himself. With Sansa, it's just the Starks. That's all she's concerned about. With Arya, she's influenced by not only the training, but she's influenced by Hound. She's influenced by his worldview. Of never belonging anywhere. That's why when she's leaving, she says that she doesn't even want to come back to Winterfell. I mean, she's somebody that's why she lets her direwolf go. She's somebody who is just so drawn into herself as an individual, you know, that the whole training is the girl has no name. The girl has no name, the word, the whole notion of a name is the girl has no identity. So the training that she has taken and the people she has interacted with has basically taken away her identity in a very different way. It's the same thing that's happened to Bran. So the with Sansa, her identity has been strengthened. She sees herself more as a Stark than she ever was. But with these people, this identity has kind of withered away. And that's how people react to stress. And see, these are the small points which is so masterful in Game of Thrones. I mean, people see it, but they often don't realize it. That there's a reason why these things happen. And that's really the hallmark of good world building. When you define these rules, and then you stay consistent with it through the 25 characters that you're building.
Okay. And as we draw to a close, of course, I'm coming back home to Hyderabad, and later today we've got the IPL finale, yet another CSK versus Mumbai.
Man, what?
So is it?
What a terrible bore!
Are you excited at all?
I am as excited about this as I would be excited about Krishi Darshan at 6:15 on Doordarshan. I do not know. I mean, this is the most uninspiring, terrible final ever from people who have won it. So I was so hoping that Delhi makes it to the finals, because I think that IPL needed a new champion. It needed a champion like Delhi, which, I mean, there's a personal thing was, of course, that Saurav Ganguly was there, but the very profile of the team, I think it's, we've had enough of Dhoni and Rohit Sharma and Malinga. We've had it, man. It's been 10 friggin' years. We have seen those same people holding a lot of the trophy. We want to see new faces. I think it would have been a great, it would have been great for IPL if it was a Rishabh Pant or a Shreyas Iyer, or, you know, the kind of the passing of the torch to that next generation. It's just not happening. I don't see it in the team, and I just feel that I don't really care who wins. It's terrible either way. All I want to see is how they show that in the Netflix. I tweeted also, you know, what I see, how this is going to be presented in the Mumbai Indians, you know, the second season of the Mumbai Indians documentary on Netflix, which I believe is much more entertaining than this final. It is like infinitely more entertaining than this final in a so bad it's good way. But this final, man, I just could not care for it. Who do I think will win? I don't know. I think Chennai will win because they just seem to be winning. But it just goes to show that I have absolutely no idea about IPL. So I don't think I put Chennai or Mumbai. I might have put Mumbai in my top four, but I definitely did not put Chennai. I didn't think that team could make it through, but they have done so again. It's remarkable. I appreciate Chennai. So in his thoughts, I guess it's okay if Chennai wins, because, you know, those, you know, it's remarkable achievement physically for those guys to have, you know, basically gone through this whole tournament and still be winning. And, you know, coming back, you know, going through the playoffs, coming back to the qualifiers and stuff and coming in, it would be a great achievement for them physically to do it. And I think if Dhoni takes the cup, it was possibly going to be the last cup he will ever hold. And I think it will be a fitting end to, without doubt, the greatest captain now that India has ever had in all forms of the game. I mean, if he manages to do this, this would be, again, an absolute, absolute masterful captaincy. There's no other way. We have to do our episode on captaincy styles that we've been teasing for a long time, but we haven't gotten around to. But you could just see that, you know, being a great player does not make you a great captain. And I think that if Chennai wins today, the contrast between the number one captain of the number one team and the captain of the number eight team wouldn't be so stark. You would see the difference in between Kohli and Dhoni and how even with, I don't think Chennai had a great team this year. Even with, I would say, a okay team. I mean, look at Shane Watson. He basically performed in only one game. Rayudu did not perform in any games. Raina didn't perform in any games. Okay, this is, you know, Raina is really the heart of Chennai. If you look at the tournament winning period, he scored like 400 runs every season. There's one time I think he missed out, he scored 399. So, and he's done nothing for this season. And yet that team wins and goes to the final. This is absolutely remarkable. It's not exciting for me personally, but if I take a step back, yeah, it's fairly remarkable. So Mumbai Indians, no, I'm not supporting them in any shape or form. Unless, of course, I get a great episode in the second season where that, if that happens, then everything is forgiven.
Wow. So that was a huge buffet of topics for today's podcast. We started off with media centricity, talked about Gautam Gambhir, talked about the Time story, World Cup, Game of Thrones, and ended with the IPL finale. So pick and choose the topics which you'd love to listen to. And also let us know if you like this format where we discuss all the news around the week, or if you prefer the, you know, usual format where we Arnab takes one or two topics and dwells deep into them. Of course, we can always do both every now and then. Also, another reminder about the Odisha Fund. So if you put off donating at the start of the podcast, now that we are almost done, you should do that. We have a link right here in the show notes. Also, as you know by now, you can write in to us at appodcast@talkingstuff.net. with your ideas, with your comments, and also send in WhatsApp messages, as most of you are doing increasingly. And our number for that is 96525-78833. That's 96525-STUFF, S-T-U-F-F. If you are outside India, make sure you add +91 as a country code for India. And also, of course, we've not plugged this in a couple of times, but Arnab, we've got your... if you want to contribute to Arnab, if you want to support Arnab directly, then of course we've got a Patreon page. That's patreon.com/greatbong. So that'll help you. That'll help Arnab directly. And before I finish, just wanted to let you know that we've got the second episode of our new podcast, Binge On, where Raj and I, we discuss and we recommend a couple of documentaries each, one documentary feature length and one docu-series. So you can search for Binge On wherever you're listening to this podcast, or head over to anchor.fm/BINGEON, Binge On, and we hope you like that as well. So Arnab, we discussed a lot today. Any parting words of wisdom?
No, thank you. Thank you for listening. And again, if you want to support this podcast, then this Patreon page, please do, you know, feel free to contribute. It's obviously good. The appreciation is good. Monetary appreciation is better. But even if you cannot contribute, please don't forget to rate the podcast on your, you know, whichever platform, yes, you listen to it on. That really helps, because it helps push the podcast up in search results. So, you know, any kind of and you know, do send in your comments. You know, your, is this cliche goes, the bouquets and brickbats, hopefully more bouquets than brickbats. So please keep sending them in. Send in whatever questions you have. I really, really like the question format. I love to answer questions. I think it just works better if something is phrased in the form of a question. I think, you know, Plato and Socrates realized that a long time ago.
Okay, that's pretty much it for this week. And thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.